is.
What are you doing that stupid trickery crap for?
Is Felger and Mass.
The continued ish.
On 98.5.
Unbelievable.
The Sports Hub.
Hour number two, Felger and Maz. As I said earlier, cats away, the mice will play. Jim Murray's alongside, mic's off. Tim McBone here to give us headlines. We started the day with Tom Brady's presser over the weekend, and that will take up the majority of the show. But Julian Edelman also spoke over the weekend down in Foxborough, and excuse me, at the end of his presser, was similarly asked about Alex Guerrero. So at the end of his presser over the weekend, Edelman was also asked about Guerrero, just as Brady was. Neither of these questions came until the end. In the case of Brady, he pretty much cut short the press conference with that question. I don't know if it would have gone on any further anyway. In the case of Edelman, it felt like the thing went on for a little bit before anyone asked. And then finally, our buddy Greg Bedard did ask Edelman about Guerrero, and here's how that exchange went.
You know, there's a little more contact going up and dusting old cobwebs out and getting to hit somebody. And
I don't think that's it, Jimmy. So Edelman 8, is that the one you just played? That is the one you just played. All right, well, let's see if we can find it in the system for you. Edelman asked about Guerrero and was, in the case of Edelman, I've heard him described over the weekend as being, quote unquote, accountable. Right, I've seen a bunch of stories written in which, and even headlines, indicating that Edelman was quote unquote accountable. Do you feel that that is true, Murray?
Yeah, that's what it sounded like to me. I mean, I don't really know how much more you want me to expound on that. It did sound like he owned it. And if anything else, it sounded like he was disappointed in that he's letting the team down for getting popped for this. And he's not going to be available for those first four games.
Okay, so I wonder if Guerrero would agree. And I think Jimmy has found the cut we were talking about. Again, Jimmy, that's my mistake, not yours. But go ahead and play.
You don't want to use the word mistake. You don't want to repeat the mistake. So what was the issue so you don't repeat?
You know what? That's in the past. And I'm just moving on forward. I already addressed it. And, you know, you guys know me, short memory. So, you know, I'm done with it.
I just got to ask you a follow-up, though. But do you know what happened so you don't repeat it?
I mean, it's NFL policy not to even talk about it. So, you know, you guys know how that goes.
Okay, so again, Edelman, that's him talking about the suspension on the hole in the field test. And just says, it's in the past. It's in the past. See, I don't feel, Murray, like he was fully accountable.
Well, he also said, I got to follow the protocols a little bit better. I mean, how much more do you want to get out of him from that? Like, you know, he's not going to tell you exactly what he took.
So my real frustration with Edelman is if I were Alex Guerrero. So he was asked about Guerrero, and at no point does he say, hey, Alex had nothing to do with this. He's been great to me. At no point does he say any of that. And I always think it's revealing when oftentimes what someone doesn't say versus what they do say. And so I just wonder if I remember that Guerrero released a statement when news of Edelman's suspension first came down.
Right. Almost, you know, within a couple of hours.
Okay. I've known Julian since his rookie year, and he is a phenomenal athlete who takes his training seriously. It's disappointing to hear today's news. Elite athletes sometimes work with multiple coaches and health professionals as part of their off-season training. Here at our facility, we take a natural, holistic, appropriate, and above all, legal approach to training and recovery for all of our clients. And anyone who would suggest otherwise is irresponsible and just plain wrong. I just thought that there was an opportunity there over the weekend for Edelman to come to the defense of Guerrero a little bit more. And do you feel like Edelman has defended Guerrero here through this process?
No, I don't know.
He hasn't, Murray. He hasn't. He hasn't. In fact, he's been very sort of down the middle, you know, not either way. And I don't know, maybe that's by design. I don't know what the strategy is. You know, I'm not the sharpest PR guy in the world when it comes to stuff like that. But I just think if you really believe in the guy, wouldn't you come out publicly and say this has nothing to do with him? Or, I don't know, you tell me, would that come off as some sort of, you know, non-denial denial, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, maybe, but maybe. Look, I don't know. It seemed to me like he owned the damn thing, and that's it. If anything else, what I got out of it is that there's a disappointment in his voice that he's not going to be available for this team for the first 4 weeks, and maybe he realizes what the depth is at that position, and maybe that's why there is such, gloominess in the way that he's talked about it, because he realizes he's going to be letting them down, and Brady doesn't have the weapons he's certainly used to having, you know?
Rich is in East Bridgewater. Rich, what do you got?
Hi, guys. Can I ask you a quick question for Jimmy Stewart, Jimmy Murray, and Maz? Have you ever had a boss in your careers, which is a long time, that you hated or was, like, really unfair and miserable?
Of course.
Yes, 100%.
Okay.
It's the radio business.
All three of you have. Can you imagine 20 years of Bill Belichick as your boss, and at this point in time, when Brady says, well, the non-answer, you know, like, you know, we're buddies now and all that, can you blame him for that the response?
Well, so, Rich, the variable is, did you win with that boss? And I know, look, we're not all in pro sports, but did you have success with that boss?
He's a great coach. I don't want him to see him fired, but let's put it this way. If he beats you down year after year after year after year after year, and somebody finally, after 20 years, you just say, oh, my God, I'm so tired of this. Okay, second question is this. Why does Brady owe Ben Volen an answer to that question about another teammate that Tom Brady has nothing to do with? And when he picks up his helmet and walks away, of course he's pissed. Ben Volen asks questions have nothing to do with real football. He's looking for a TMZ answer.
Yeah, you know what, Rich?
So what if Mike Reese asked the question?
Yeah, I'm going to let you go because you know what? You just sounded to me like a Patriots bobo, frankly. And so Volen's wrong for asking the question? Brady doesn't want to answer it. He doesn't have to answer it. He doesn't have to answer the question. But you don't even want it asked down there. That's your problem.
Now that's silly. As much as I'm a Brady guy, I am. It's a fair question to ask.
So the reality is that fans like that guy are just bobos that don't want the question asked at all, because all they want to do is do what everyone else does, which is kiss Brady's ass. That's what you want. So it's not Volen. If anyone asked it, you'd have been pissed. Although, as Jimmy pointed out, maybe if it were Mike Reese, you wouldn't. I don't know. But heaven forbid that someone ask a question that's actually inbounds. It's just not as comfortable and as cozy as you want it to be, whether it's about football or not. And in this case, I would argue it is a little bit about football. Edelman just got popped. He works out with Guerrero. Is that really a stretch? Why is that so wrong? God, I hate people like that. Heaven forbid you ask a question, even if it's not the popular question. And again, you want to tell me that Volen didn't ask it in the right way? I disagree, but whatever, fine. Have it your way. But don't tell me he didn't have a right to ask it. Of course he did. I'd be willing to bet, though, you're okay with the one Shaughnessy asked about Butler because you don't like Belichick, you're a Brady guy. I'd be willing to bet it. Our buddy Bob's in Easton. Bob, go ahead. He's back from beyond. What do you got, Bob?
I don't know what's worse, Tony. You trying to figure out technology or the guy who's doing your headlines? This is terrible. Listen.
It's me, Bob. It's me, definitely me, but go ahead.
You know, you dig yourself even deeper. Yes, it's an unfair question to ask Tom Brady about Julian Edelman. I didn't get... I'll let you ask your...
He didn't ask about Edelman. He asked about Guerrero, Bob.
But he was at, whoa. He said when Julian tested positive, Tony, that's the way it was asked.
Right. And he said a lot of people connected it to Alex Guerrero. What's your reaction to that? Do you think it's fair? It was a Guerrero question.
But Tony, he said Julian. So he's asking about Julian. Why did you ask your award-winning question that I didn't get to hear?
Oh, I don't remember. I don't remember what I said to you when you were on hold, Bob.
Let me refresh your memory.
Go, just hurry up.
There were two other questions that were asked to Tom Brady. What was your take on any of the rumors of the turmoil between him and Belichick? And then he said he had no thoughts. Okay, so that was obviously presented in a pretty negative way. But then he asked about Josh McDaniel. But obviously that was asked you know, how excited are you to have Josh McDaniels? So what would you go question from that?
Okay, so your point is that some of those questions were framed positively and others were framed negatively. Is that right?
Not some. Not some. There was agenda slanted.
Okay, well, look, so you're saying, but even the positive ones then were agenda slanted.
Right, right, exactly. Where
yeah, but those you're okay with, Bob, but those you're okay with because they're positive questions.
That was far too much of that guy today.
So this is my point, I agree. Way too much Bob and Easton today. I felt bad because I put him on hold the last time and he couldn't hear the question. But heaven forbid, I'm sorry, I just get agitated when people come to Brady's defense on this particular topic. Like somehow the question was out of bounds. How is the question out of bounds? Tom Brady hasn't shown up for months other than the three-day minicamp. A guy that he works out with also trains Edelman, at least in part. Edelman gets suspended. If this were any other athlete in any other town, we would draw a connection there. We do it all the time in pro sports. All the time. But Brady gets asked about it and storms off like a little girl, and all of a sudden, it's the media's the bad guy? And Bill Belichick won't answer the questions about Malcolm Butler, and Shaughnessy's the a-hole, although many of you did side with Shaughnessy on that one. So, look, you don't like Bill, you like Tom. So it's okay to ask Bill the question, but it's not okay to ask the one to Tom. The one that he's uncomfortable asking. What, you people just need to admit your biases. That's okay. You like Brady, you don't like Bill. It's fine. I think they both need to be asked. To me, that's the right way, the fair way to do it. And that I want to know from each of them. I'd like to know, given the magnitude of the story, I'd like to know where it all stands. There's been a lot of turmoil around there over the last several months. The Patriots want it to all just go away, which I get. And I don't blame them. If I were them and I showed up for a new season, I wouldn't want to remember the end of the last year either. Who would? But people aren't supposed to ask. They're supposed to show up and just pretend none of this stuff ever happened when they haven't played a game since. Trust me, it will go away eventually. It will. It'll go away either in the preseason or more likely in the regular season when they start winning games and people will forget. Unless or until there's another Malcolm Butler incident or there's some sort of blow up between the coach and the quarterback. Then the questions will come back up. Because many of you, all you care about is the wins and the losses, which is fine. But just don't blame the reporters for asking the questions. Because then you're as bad as Brady is, storming off. Little Tommy girl got upset. We'll continue with your calls next.
You're listening to Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Oh, I like this.
This is Felger and Mass.
Part of me wants to do it just to feel what that feels like.
98.5, the Sports Hub. The
Sports Hub. The Sports Hub. The Sports Hub.
Alex Guerrero, he offered a statement shortly after your suspension. What's your relationship like with him and your confidence in what he does?
You know, what's in the past is in the past. I love Alex. And ultimately, I'm worried about just going out here and playing football. I'm not here to talk about and make a headline on something. You know, I'm just here playing football, buddy.
So that's the Edelman exchange with Craig Bedard on Alex Guerrero. I'm not here to make a headline. And again, maybe that's the logic, Murray. That if they answer any questions, they know that there'll be a headline out of it. It'll draw more attention and they want it to all just go away. They want it to all just go away. But I don't think it's wrong. And this is the part that irritates me with Patriots fans and sort of the theme with the callers today. I don't understand why it's wrong to ask these questions. Tom Brady in particular, Tom Brady hasn't been there all year. Ever since the Super Bowl, Brady's been there for mini camp and that's it. Otherwise, you know, he does his interviews everywhere else. So he shows up and people finally get a chance to ask questions. And Brady gets mad that someone asks about Alex Guerrero given the Edelman suspension? I mean, that one feels pretty basic. That's what I would do. If I were down there, I would ask. I would absolutely ask. And Edelman, too, same thing. Since the news, at least since the news of the appeal, that the appeal was denied. I think that's the first time Edelman has spoken. So, I you know, again, that's in the past. I understand Patriots want to just move on from it. I get it. They want to go back to playing football. Maybe that's a good sign. Because at times last year, it felt like, Murray, you've cited the Buffalo game, where Brady flipped out on the sideline at McDaniels and Gronk
lost his mind. And, you know, it was supposed to be about him being held the whole time and, you know, not getting calls from officials. But I think it was more than that, especially when you find out he wasn't having fun last year and there was talk of him possibly retiring. Like, I think that had to do with his relationship with Belichick and that he had kind of checked out a little bit.
For sure. I mean, really, again, I just don't think it's at all out of bounds to be asking these questions. Really, what have we turned into here? You can't even ask the question anymore? Good God. Albert's in Rhode Island. This ought to be good. What do you got, Albert?
Yeah, how you doing, guys?
Oh, it's a different Tony, Albert. Go ahead.
No, this is Albert. This is your boy. It pains me to call you and have to agree with you. But again, we continue to reach lower and lower levels of overall integrity in Boston sports. I mean, like, now it's gone to the point where Tommy gets upset. He reminds me of a sixth grade kid. Like, if your mother would take your cell phone, that's how a sixth grade kid would react. He would stomp his feet. Oh, I'm out. I'm going to walk away. Like a bitch. Like a child. Like a little baby. And there's this understood omerta in Boston sports where you try hard idiots from Dorchester and Southie have to come to this guy's defense. Give it up. It's tired. It's stupid. It's old. It's worn out. And Jim, why are you wearing sunglasses inside? You're not Zoe. You're not well built. Why the hell are you wearing sunglasses? Answer that question, please.
Because there's lights in here that are so blinding, it makes it almost impossible to focus. So I know I look like a complete DB by having to wear sunglasses inside. I'm not doing it for aesthetic value. I'm not doing it to look cool. I don't even like the fact that I have to do it, but I have to do it because I can't see. So, until they fix the lights, I'm going to wear sunglasses inside.
I kind of like it, Murray. I'd keep doing it if I were you. I kind of like it. The last thing I would ever accuse you of is wanting to be like Zoe. Mike and Woburn, what do you got?
I still say that get the welder's goggles, Jim.
Yes.
You can't do the sunglasses. Because if you do the sunglasses, you're going to get idiots like Albert calling in. Get the welder's mask. Get some of those eclipse like goggles. Go full ridiculous.
And go then, like steam. Yeah, I'll have like the steampunk look is what I'll get.
Yes, exactly. can we stop turning professional sports into the Boy Scouts? Because does Tom have to raise his hand now and say, on my honor, I promise to answer all the questions at this press conference truthfully and honestly?
Mike,
please.
Mike, whoever said he had to answer the question, whoever said he had to answer it.
I'm just saying, it's ridiculous. And I'll tell you what, I'm disappointed in Tom that he gave Volan what he gave him based on how the Globe has been going through his dump. Where's Bob Holler? Was Bob Holler down there? Or was he still fishing through the dumpsters at Best Buddies? Or going through Guerrero's trash.
So you're like, just, Mike, you're just another one of these guys that want everybody to...
No, you clearly are.
You just want everybody to kiss Brady's ass. That's what you want.
No, I don't. I want the owner of the Red Sox to stop sending his attack dogs to the Patriots because they outperform his team. Where was Bob Holler? Was Bob Holler covering the Bayside Expo Center, the boat show, when Hanley was FaceTiming with Pablo Escobar at the traffic stop? Where was Bob Holler on that story? Because the Globe was completely missed the boat when the Red Sox had one of their players FaceTiming with a drug dealer. That was there was nobody covering that story. But man, when the Patriots go to the White House, we've got to have somebody going through Best Buddy's trash to make sure Tom isn't dirty with the charity that he's made tens of millions of dollars for. Honestly, anybody not named Chris Gasper, and I was Tom Brady, they would get the full Heisman. One word answers on any questions from low people.
All right,
from now on, because obviously there's an agenda there, and it has nothing to do with backing the quarterback, backing the coach, or backing anybody like from a rooting perspective. It's a this is Red Sox.
Mike, are you done yet?
Crime.
Are you done yet? I get the message, Murray. Is it just me, or is everything with this guy a conspiracy theory now? Whether it's the officials or the league office, and look, he might be right. I'm not telling you, but it feels like everything's a freaking conspiracy.
Well, he was right to point out, you know, how they handled the Hanley Ramirez thing, though. That was embarrassing. Nope, end of story. Nothing to see here. No, the story's over, period, point blank.
So, look, I'm not here to defend the Globe. Okay, I'm not going to tell you that the Globe could look harder at the Red Sox And frankly, I'll even stick to the baseball coverage and feel like the baseball coverage overall is borderline embarrassing. What was the headline last week that sent me into orbit? Nathan Eovaldi has the skill set to succeed in October?
Right.
Based on what? He's never pitched in October, for crying out loud. Go at the Globe all you want. But I love how Mike always twists the argument. Right? Always twists the argument. Nobody said Brady had to answer the question, Mike. All I said was that he didn't have to storm off like a little girl because someone had the audacity to ask him a question that's inbounds. It is. It's inbounds. Really. I mean, it shouldn't be. If it's reached the point where we can't ask the quarterback any questions that delve into an area that might be a little uncomfortable, well, then what the hell? Why don't y'all just move to Happy Valley? Because that feels like the place for you. I need a little break. Do you feel my temperature rising,
yes,
Murray?
Yes, very much so.
Okay.
Kind of hot on a Monday.
So here's what we're going to do. Take a little break. I want to touch on the Red Sox, and that, which is ironic, that the Red Sox will actually bring my temperature down, because usually it's the other way around. We'll touch on that, but I do have a couple of thoughts from the weekend, yesterday in particular, Nathan Eovaldi being one of them.
Felger and Maz. Felger and Maz.
Oh.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
And true to the scouting report, he hasn't walked anybody. And that's in there. Strike three, froze him. 1-2-3 again for Nathan Eovaldi. He has had himself a day. Just 82 pitches through his seven.
He was very good. Good mix of pitches, cutters, four-seamers, the breaking ball. His last outing against them, I think it was a bad one. 8 runs in 2 innings, and he left a lot of pitches down the middle of the strike zone. Not tonight, not today. He was very efficient.
Quick little Red Sox respite here. They take 3 out of 4 from the Minnesota Twins. Murray, you said you were... You took particular note of the game on Friday night.
Yeah, I mean, look, another entertaining comeback win, further proof that Mookie Betts should likely be the MVP of the league. So, you know, all that's well and good. But still, you had a performance from the Wheel of Gutless Bums yet again. And it was a stretched out save attempt for Craig Kimbrell that didn't go his way. So I still think there's concerns with the bullpen there. Again, nice comeback win there. Mookie Betts with the walk-off, you know, big excitement there. But still, red flags from that game that still need to be addressed going forward.
I mean, really, even from the beginning of the series, right? I mean, the Gutless Bums games goes back to Thursday night. Friday night, it happened again. They got bailed out. Devers hit the home run, then Mookie Betts. And again, more emotion from Mookie, too, right? I heard you talking about this some on Saturday. Like, you've seen more emotion from Mookie Betts in the last, I don't know, 2-3 weeks, whenever it was, going back to that Grand Slam, that maybe you've seen at all in his Red Sox career, in the entirety of his Red Sox career before this last little stretch. So Mookie's into it. I mean, he's fully on board, invested all of it, and you're getting a great Mookie Betts right now. Friday night was really, though, as you said, Murray, the key game to the series. Because if they lose that one, Devers doesn't homer, then they split with the Twins. You have a totally different feeling. Instead, they win it. Then they blow them out on Saturday. Eovaldi pitches yesterday. Now they've won 3 out of 4. 5.5 up on the Yankees, who split with Kansas City over the weekend. Blah, 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 blah. Here you go. And now they're rolling again. And so I just thought it was a good time to touch base on them, because the Eovaldi game yesterday, we spent a lot of time talking last week about Dave Dombrowski's comments after they acquired Eovaldi, and Dombrowski trying to say that Eovaldi was a better fit for them than Zach Britton. And just so we're all clear on the message, that is the part of Dombrowski's press conference that sent me over the edge. It wasn't the deal. Nobody panned the deal. They gave up nothing in Jalen Beeks to get Nathan Eovaldi.
And he got his face ripped off over the weekend, too.
Jalen Beeks did?
Yeah.
Oh, see, I didn't even notice that, Murray. You're ahead of me on that one. I didn't even notice, but I'm not sure.
I think
sure.
He went 3 1/3 and gave up like 9 runs.
Yeah, yeah, it was real bad.
That kid's got nothing. He's got nothing.
Yeah, he projects to be like a fifth starter, maybe.
Oh, you know? God. The first time I saw him pitch, I'm like, talk about ordinary. He looks like a BP pitcher, if you ask me. So Eovaldi went to the mound yesterday, and it's against the Minnesota Twins. Excuse me. In the pitching line, 7 innings, 4 hits, no runs, no walks, 5 strikeouts. He threw 82 pitches. And again, it's the Twins. But I'll tell you, honestly, I was impressed.
Oh, I was too. And still, that he gave you that many innings. Like, I would have been happy with 5 2/3, something like that. That he gave you 7, like, and looked mostly dominant. Like, that's encouraging.
I mean, he was good. Now, look, I'm one of these people who believes you never know what you're getting until you watch a player over and over and over again. Like, you need to see it. And there's a reason this guy's moved around a lot. But, you know, in the trade aftermath and everything sort of around it, there was some things written and said about Eovaldi and how he's added a cut fastball, he's improved. And this is something that I noticed yesterday, and maybe it was a one-day thing. But that cut fastball he threw, legit. Boy, it was really good. I mean, not only did the ball move, it dropped. And so I don't know if this is a new thing and he's a different pitcher now or what. I have no idea. All I'm telling you is that guy who pitched yesterday, if that's who he is, and I'm not sure he is because even Eovaldi said after the game, I'm not sure I'm going to pitch like that every time out. Okay, so he said that. But if that's who he is, that guy will make a difference. He was good. There was something else that struck me about the game. Really, a couple of things. One that caught everybody's attention, but I'll get to those in a minute. Rogers and Quincy. Go ahead, Roger.
Yeah, well, I'm glad to hear you backtrack in Mazzarotti, because that's what I was calling on, was over the weekend, the comeback win, and then Dombrowski's performance, the deals he's made, specifically with regard to Grabaldi.
Yeah, so Roger, I'm going to let you go. You're that guy who calls in and is a clown all the time. And I don't mind the voice. It's pretty good.
It's also like his phone was self-editing.
Oh, my God. It was brutal. Yeah. I mean, I was starting to lose my mind there. Like every third or fourth word was just missing. Crazy. So I told you, I wanted to take just a little respite here and touch on the Red Sox. The other things that struck me in this game, third base, Blake Swihart at third base. Rafael Devers is now on the disabled list again. Now, Devers had a big home run in the game Friday night, Murray, that you were talking about, and not a small hit. I mean,
it was a rocket.
Yeah, but the importance of right?
Sure, yeah.
Nobody out in the ninth.
And that Fernando Rodney stinks. You know, that was the other thing, my other takeaway from watching that game, too, was, all right, so they still need bullpen help. We know that one of the albatrosses on Dave Dombrowski, if not the biggest albatross on him, is that he has a difficulty building a bullpen, obviously bit his ass a couple of times in Detroit. And he was looking at Fernando Rodney as like one of the options here. He imploded in a couple of these games in this 4-game series, and specifically on Friday night, he sucks. So this is what he's looking at, and this is what he's thinking is a nice arm he can add to this bullpen and be the setup man? My God. It just kind of like left me shook, like, oh, man, you really can't trust this guy's assessments when it comes to bullpen help. You can't.
Hey, McBone, how do you feel about Fernando Rodney?
Out on Fernando Rodney. That is not the bullpen arm that
garbage.
I would add. Yeah, absolutely not.
Okay, so, Murray, I told you so on this, right? I told you on Rodney. You don't want any part of Rodney. I was trying to explain this to Felger when he was going over the list of possible relief options, and that Fernando Rodney is being one of the guys. I said, you don't want Fernando Rodney. And after watching him, I think now most people agree with me. Trust me, that guy is a disaster waiting to happen. But after homering Friday night, Devers ends up going on the DL. So Swihart makes his first career start at third base. And I heard this play on the radio. I still haven't seen it. But apparently in the first inning, he had to back up a ball on the third baseline. Played it correctly. Didn't get the guy, but played it right. And then started a 5-4-3 double play in a ball that he almost looked like a goalie. He kind of went down and blocked it like a goalie would, harnessed it in his chest, but he made a good feed to Nunez. They turned a 5-4-3 double play. Meanwhile, Swihart also had 2 hits.
Hasn't he hit in like 9 straight games, 10 straight games?
He does. He has a 9-game hitting streak, Murray. Very good. And I have always been a Blake Swihart fan, which sounds ridiculous when you say, how can anybody possibly care about a player as irrelevant as Blake Swihart? But I do. I mean, for whatever reason, I liked him when he came up. And in 2015, you know, he hit .274. There was a game in New York against the Mets where he hit a home run, and I remember thinking, man, there's a little juice in that bat. He hit a double to the triangle. Was that yesterday or the other game over the weekend? Might have been yesterday. And then a single as well yesterday. He had 2 hits. As you said, Murray's hit 9 straight.
He looks more comfortable.
So his average is up to like, I mean, this is always embarrassing to put it that way, but he's basically at .230 now, okay? For a guy that was hitting .150 not so long ago, that's not bad. So I'm intrigued. Like, I want to see more of him at third base. And maybe there's a way that he could help him out. I think Swihart's a pretty decent player.
So is he the answer while Devers is out, or should they go try to see if they can poach Adrian Beltre?
Oh, I don't think they're going to make a move for a third baseman. I don't think they're going to do that. I think any move the Red Sox make between now and the deadline, remember the deadline's at 4 o'clock tomorrow.
Right.
So we'll be on the air during the Major League trading deadline tomorrow, and we'll keep you up to date there on anything that happens. But I believe the Red Sox are going to add more bullpen help. I think it's going to be cheap bullpen help, but I think that that's what they're going to do. When we get back, the play from yesterday's game that everybody at Fenway Park was talking about, we'll touch on that.
You're listening to Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
At the end of your ride home, you'll be all caught up.
You get suspended again, you're going to miss playoff time, or you're going to miss time in the playoffs.
Or questioning your judgment.
Sorry I brought it up.
Felger and Mass, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Man, a 1-2. Left center field, on the move, Jackie Bradley. Lunging, diving, oh, he made the play, and he slams into the wall. A sliding stab on a great, great catch by Jackie Bradley. At the crack of the bat, it looked like there was no way on earth he was going to run that down, but he did.
No, and look at Evaldi, the pitcher. I mean, he's standing there just clapping. Welcome to the Red Sox when you got Jackie Bradley in center field. Like that catch right there is one of the best I've ever seen.
He's getting a standing ovation here. Goodness gracious. And paid the price.
So it's always worth touching on with Jackie Bradley when he makes a play like the one he made yesterday. Top of the third inning, Red Sox had just scored two runs to go up 2-0. Bobby Wilson hits a ball to the gap in left center field that looked like certain extra bases. Should have been a double at the very least, right? And given that Bradley dove, I don't know, maybe it could have been a triple, but it would have been a double. The next guy ended up grounding out. So in effect, the Twins should have ended up with a man on third and one out. Instead, Nathan Eovaldi making his Red Sox debut, like breezed through the inning. I think he threw a total of like 5-6 pitches in the inning or something like that. I'd have to go back and count, but it was under 10. So instead of having the lead man on second, nobody out, it's one out, and then Eovaldi gets the next two, and he walks right off the mound because of that catch by Jackie Bradley. So this sort of, to me, is always an opportunity to ask, does Jackie Bradley's defense make up for his offense? The two of you quickly. Jim Murray's alongside today along with...
No, it doesn't. No, and because he's having a hot month right now, too. It doesn't mean that he's going to be able to sustain that going forward. He's having his typical hot month. Defense is great. That catch yesterday, I'm not going to downplay it and sit here like Jones and be like, well, you know, you expect me to say that that's a great catch and blah, 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 blah. Like he's the modern day Willie Mays. Like, I'm not going to do that. It's a great catch. Albeit overblown, and I actually think he's had far more wow moments in terms of catches he's made. Rob's Aaron Judge last year is a catch in Detroit early last year. Like, there's been better catches to me. It was a hell of a play, but like, everybody calm down. But does it make up for the offense? No.
McBone?
That catch was ridiculous yesterday, I thought. And look, the last 25 games, he has been hitting really well. I think over 300, four home runs. So, yeah, I would ride this as long as you possibly can. Absolutely.
Okay. I would not sell high.
Well, so look, I just, to me, it's funny. And, you know, the last 25 games, looking it up, McBone, 276 average, an OPS of 876. But it makes me laugh how quickly people forget. Thursday night, people were ready to lose their minds because Bradley struck out with the bases loaded to end the game. So he makes this great catch yesterday. He gets this huge ovation. The inning ends quickly. He comes off the field to give him another ovation. And he leads off the next inning, so they're still cheering. And you know what happened? He struck out. Jackie Bradley came up to the plate, and he struck out. Looking. Typical. So he's still hitting 214. Now, again, I just think that some of the stuff I heard yesterday about that catch, and it was a good catch, don't get me wrong. Like, he legitimately had to dive. He was, you know, going to crash into the wall. It took some balls to make that play.
Definitely.
So, and that's really the hardest part of the play. It's not the dive or anything else. It's knowing that, I'm going to slam into the wall unless I'm careful here. And he was actually able to protect himself pretty well and still make the play. But I've heard people say, oh my gosh, one of Jackie Bradley's top five all-time catches. I remember a better one on Memorial Day where he ran straight back and caught the ball over his head. Do you remember that one?
Yeah.
That was better than this one. That was only a couple of months ago, for crying out loud, and people have already forgotten it. But does it make up for the offense? No. Murray, you couldn't be more right. No. No way does it make up for the offense. Anthony's in Medford. What do you got, Anthony?
Hey, what's up, Tony? Yeah, Eovaldi, the last time I seen him pitch with the Yankees, you were right. On his fastball, like everybody else's, 97, it was dead straight. But it had dynamite movement. It was a cutter. It had dynamite movement. If we get that every other start, I'll be satisfied. And if they could add a reliever, I know it ain't going to be nobody big, but something like a Ziegler or something. And Murray's right. No way this a friggin' catch wasn't that great. And it doesn't make up for his friggin' hitting. He's hitting good right now, JBJ, but I'd like Murray, sell high on that guy because you know he's going to go on a tail splint again.
Okay.
And you know what, Maz? Swihart, you could tell the kid can hit. You know what I mean? Now, Bradley can't. Swihart, I'm high on. Thanks,
okay,
Tony.
So again, as usual, and Mike points this out all the time, Anthony gets in like, he hits on like four different things in about 40 seconds. So the 40 seconds part, I like. I mean, he covers a lot of ground, but you just don't know which one to touch on. Most immediately. What's your feeling on
spices it up with friggin' too?
Just quickly, Murray, do you have any thoughts whatsoever on Swihart, or is it just my personal little porn session with him all the time?
No, I'll always feel like they kind of did him dirty, you know, in terms of, you know, he's supposed to be a catcher, then they put him in left field, they got him hurt, and it felt like he was going to be lost. But I think you can see he's, you know, when he's comfortable, like it feels like he is right now, kid's a professional hitter at the very least.
Yeah, so look,
I don't know what the hell his position's supposed to be.
Well, so that's sort of an issue. And he's never, I don't think he's ever going to be the kind of guy that hits 30 home runs. He's not that kind of hitter. So maybe he is exactly how they're using him, which is you spot him around the diamond and he plays a bunch of different positions and he'll hit you a bunch of doubles. Like, I just think there's...
Tony, people forget how good he was in 2015. He started out sluggish at the plate and built his average up to 270, whatever it was. And he played a very strong catcher position, I thought, that year. And didn't he get sent down because he defied Farrell? Which, by the way, more of the team should have done.
In retrospect, Jimmy, that's right. It may not have been a bad move.
Get no argument there.
Believe it or not, though, I think it was Vasquez who you're talking about that defied Farrell. It was with Stephen Wright on the mound.
Maybe there was an incident with Swihart that didn't go public.
Maybe there was. It feels like Jimmy's got inside info again, Murray. As always, there's something behind the scenes going on that Jimmy knows about. Look, they may end up dealing Swihart by this time tomorrow. I mean, again, the trade deadline...
That would be stupid.
So the trade deadline's 24 hours away. And Jimmy, I'm with you. I like the kid, but they don't have anything else to deal. And he's not a kid anymore. And Murray, yes, they did him dirty. They've totally screwed him into the ground. But I think when you play him, I think he can hit. I mean, I think he can hit, you know, and I'm not talking about batting titles, but I think Blake Swihart can hit 275, 280 in the big leagues. And, you know, particularly from the left side, he's pretty good. Now, the defense, you know, it wasn't polished over there yesterday. I mean, again, on that double play, he looked like a goalie, for crying out loud, stopping the ball with his chest, but he made a good feed to second and started the 5-4-3 double play. So I'll take it. And the other thing is, especially with Devers, who's a complete butcher over there. Like, how much
times it feels like that ball's a grenade to him. So at least in Swihart's case, he's not afraid of the damn thing.
I mean, how much worse is the defense going to be is the point.
Even Pierce at times, too. There was a play on Friday night, too, where the ball came right to him. And it was like, he was like, ugh. Like, he didn't know what the hell to do with it. And he ended up going into right field. Like, dude, what are you doing? Like, that's a basic play that should be made in Little League.
So I would like to see Swihart play a little more third. Is what I'm getting at.
Swihart shouldn't be afraid of the baseball. He's a catcher, for crying out loud.
Well, so there's that too, Jimmy. Yeah. Very good point. And so I don't know. What if they play him at third in the next 10 days? They play him six or seven times. And what if he's half decent and he hits? Do you automatically put Devers back into the lineup? I told you, I got a Swihart. I've had a raging Swihart for about 5 years. Seriously, I don't know what other way to describe it as, Murray. But I do. I like the player. It's just something about him. I've always said he reminds me a little bit of, if you remember years ago, there was a catcher/outfielder/infielder, just like this kid with the Orioles, named B.J. Surhoff, and who could hit. He was just a left-handed hitter. So
of course, he was also with the Brew Crew, Milwaukee's
there
team.
There you go, Jimmy, yes. Al Conklin for the good land.
Yeah.
And so,
of course, they make great cheese and beer.
So I do. I like Swihart a lot. And I wouldn't mind seeing him get the chance. just quickly, this is a big week for the Red Sox. It's a big week. You get the deadline tomorrow. They could use bullpen help. You have the Phillies in here for two games, and they're going to see two good pitchers with the Phillies. Then they're off Wednesday. Price is pitching tonight. Then the Yankees come in for four, and Price is pitching Sunday night. So six games this week, Price gets the bookends. He gets the Monday game and the Sunday game. They're playing two good teams, both of whom are the Phillies in the playoffs are behind.
Yeah, they're
in the
first place in the East right now.
Okay, they're ahead of the Braves now.
Yeah.
Okay, so I this is one of my flaws. I don't check the National League standings as much as I should. And so, you know, but you're getting a pretty decent team. And I just think it's a good opportunity, finally, for a full week at home to see the Red Sox play some legit competition with David Price taking the ball more than anybody else in the rotation. And we'll see Eovaldi later in the week, too. So there's some good stuff to watch there with the Red Sox this week.
Also, the return of old friend Gabe Kapler, manager of the Phillies.
Of course, in their last game together, Gabe Kapler batted eighth, Alex Cora batted ninth.
He's a very popular teammate.
Also, Trot Nixon's final game as a member of the Red Sox, low ball two.
Okay, so again, I just wanted to take a little respite. As you know, baseball's at my core. It's in my blood. And so I did take note of the Red Sox. And Eovaldi, I have to admit, much to your surprise, if you're a Red Sox fan, I was pretty impressed. That cut fastball he throws is legit. I just got to see if he can repeat it.
Felger and Mass, the Sports Hub.